And we were talking about the people that are remembered for the wrong reasons. And her story, and you'll like this, Greg, was she was interviewing someone, and I think it was a Zoom, they were interstate, so it was a Zoom interview, and in the middle of the interview, they actually pulled out a kebab and started eating the kebab in the interview.
Welcome to the Greg Allen Podcast. Thanks for joining us, where we talk about life. I truly believe that everyone has a story to tell and a lesson to teach, and that's what this show is all about. So if you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave us a review. It helps us connect, inspire, and help more people like you. And I just want to do a big shout out to you for taking the time to grow and improve. So good on you. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck in life. Hey everyone, we're joined here with Leah Lambert today, and really excited to have you on the show, Leah.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Great to be here.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to learn more about the things that you're talking about at the moment around career change, but also to dive into some other things that you're excited about at the moment. But what would you say you're most excited about at the moment?
Look, Greg, I guess in terms of the work that I do, it's a pretty challenging time for most of my clients in terms of dealing with job losses and the fallout from COVID. So I guess the thing that gets me excited is when people actually are actually securing positions and, you know, I'm finding that although there is a lot of unemployment, that people are interviewing for jobs. And I guess what makes me really excited is when they call me up and say that they've just got a new job, because it's a tough market. And I had a client the other day who applied for a job that she was told there were 700 applications, and she was the one who got the job. So that was pretty exciting. That made our week.
That's awesome. That's must have been an exceptional resume and presentation to the employer for sure.
Well, we like to take a bit of credit for that, but it was actually a role working with animals. So it shows that there are so many animal lovers out there that I think it was working with like an animal protection organization, which is quite amazing that, you know, I assume that a lot of those jobs get a huge volume of applications.
Yep. No, for sure. Cool. So what is it actually that you do in the career space?
Yeah, look, I guess my business, it's called Relaunch Me. It's a Melbourne-based business, but we do work with clients all over Australia. So we do a lot of our sessions on Zoom. I started my business 6 years ago. I actually started my own career as a chartered accountant working in the tax department of a Big Four accounting firm. And I think that experience is what has driven me today to start this business, because I left school and, like so many other people, just had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do. And my parents, they were very well-meaning but hadn't been well-educated themselves, and so they just weren't able to advise me. And in those days, most people didn't have the luxury of going to see a career counsellor, and there wasn't really any career coaching done in schools. So, you know, I think I was good at pretty, you know, humanities subjects and maths, not particularly good at science. And so my mum suggested, you know, why don't you do maths or do accounting because you're good at maths? And I kind of just went along with that because I didn't know any better. And when I think back to what I should have studied now, which is probably psychology or something like that, you know, I didn't even know that sort of degree existed.
Yeah.
We didn't study those sorts of subjects at school then. So I spent the first 5 years of my career working in accounting, which, look, socially I really liked the people that I worked with, but I absolutely hated the work, and I would just I was just the world's worst clock watcher. Like, I just would hang out to coffee break at 10:30, hang out for lunch, hang out to 5 o'clock, drink, you know, to drinks on a Friday night. They were the things that motivated me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took me a long time to work out what was wrong and why I was so miserable. And it's just because the work was not energizing and didn't play to my strengths.
Yeah, totally.
So then I, sorry.
No, you continue.
So look, I escaped from taxation and I went and worked in recruitment for about 6 years, working for a recruitment agency where straight away, like I remember the first week just thinking, oh my God, this is so fun. Like this is so easy. I can't believe I'm going to get paid for this, because finally I was in a job that was using my natural strengths. And, you know, I do a lot of work now helping people around strengths coaching. And for me, my strengths are around rapport building, connecting people, building relationships, inspiring people, those sorts of strengths. And of course, working in taxation, where I was reading tax legislation and interpreting it and completing tax returns, I didn't get to use any of those strengths. The only time I probably got to use those was on a Friday night at drinks and probably overcompensated.
Yeah.
So look, you know, I did recruitment for a long time. I worked in-house in HR, and then I had my three kids in 4 years. And during that time, I took quite a few years off and just did some ad hoc consulting work just to, you know, bring a bit of money in here and there. And it was during that time, I think I did a lot of self-reflection about what I really wanted to do and what jobs I'd enjoyed in the past. And it was probably at that point I realized that, like, I actually really loved recruitment and I loved helping people, but I didn't enjoy the sales component of recruitment. And, you know, in terms of being a good recruiter, you probably have to be good at bringing in business and doing cold calling and setting up appointments. And that wasn't the part that energized me. I just liked working with the candidate and understanding what their issues were and trying to work out how to help them. And so I think it was about that point I discovered that career coaching was actually a job. And I went and back and studied. You can, down in Melbourne here, there's a careers course at RMIT. So I studied that and pretty much sort of started doing some contract work and then just set up my business sort of on the side in case anyone just happened to come along and book in for a session. And so it's grown from there. And I now have, you know, I'm pretty much working 5 days a week and have a team of four subcontractors who assist me. And we have a lot of fun.
Excellent. Oh, that's so cool. There's a couple of things I'd love to explore in this session today. First of all, you know, really putting out a framework or a structure for a person looking for a career. So I think you're going to be in a hot spot for answering those questions. Then, like, looking at it from an employer's point of view, I think that would be really good for not only someone looking for a job to understand, but anyone that has businesses now to understand how to hire better people, you know. I think that would be really good. And then what you said around strengths coaching, I'd love to explore that as well.
Mm. Cool. So where are we going to start?
Let's start with career coaching.
Yeah.
From the top.
So, look, I guess career coaching, it's what we do with people, it is a process, career change. It's often sometimes people think that it's, you know, they're going to come and book in for a career coaching session and 90 minutes later they're going to walk out with a brand new career. It's just the first step. And we always explain that, you know, it is a process, and to make the right decision, it requires a lot of self-assessment, and that's really hard work for a lot of people. Many people have never had the opportunity to hit pause on their career and actually really think about what they want. You know, a lot of the people we see have, kind of like me, fell into careers on the advice of parents and, you know, chose to go down a pathway based on what other people think is a great job or a great career. And, you know, those other people have got completely different personalities, completely different values, different interests. And so as a result, I think a lot of people in their 30s, 40s, 50s just fell into careers based on what they were good, what subjects they were good at school. So it was more based on aptitude rather than whether it was actually a good fit for their personality.
Yeah, totally. So with a career, like, how does someone know when they're not in the right career?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess there's a number of things. I think, first of all, you know, if you are really drained at the end of the day and really de-energized by your work, that's often a sign that you're doing work that isn't using your strengths. So it might be, you know, you're doing work that you have learnt to do. And often we say that they're learned behaviours. So they're things that you've got quite good at doing them, but when you actually performing that task, it doesn't energise you.
Yeah.
So I guess to give you an example, I work with a lot of teachers who are often really strong introverts. And so they've learned to, you know, that's all they know is to be in front of a classroom all the day. And it's almost like they're performing all day. But yet often they're like really strong introverts, which means that they don't really know any different, but that doesn't come naturally. So they go home at the end of the day and they're just completely exhausted.
Yeah.
Yep. Same might go for someone like an introvert who's working in a call center or somewhere where it's just fast paced. They're on the phone all day dealing with people, like, and there's so many people who, you know, I think a lot of casual jobs when you're younger tend to be around public customer service.
Yeah.
So, you know, hospitality, customer service.
Yeah.
Retail shops, all about dealing food. With people.
Yep.
You know, all these poor introverts who would much prefer to be behind the scenes doing some writing or doing spreadsheets, but that work is sort of not available when you're a younger person with not much experience. So I can't remember actually where I was going with that. I guess one of the reasons is not using your natural strengths. Another reason that you might be in the wrong career is that the environment isn't the right fit for you. So certain work environments suit certain personalities, and as a result, often people feel like they're a little bit like a square peg in a round hole, and they just don't fit in. I guess an example of that would be people often who go into healthcare professions because they are good at science. So they might be really good at science at school, and they end up going and being a dentist or a physio or an occupational therapist. And what ends up happening is they're dealing with people all day, and they have to be really caring and compassionate and empathetic. And often they're people that are actually the opposite. They're really analytical. They're really task focused and scientific. And so again, that having to be really, to listen to people's problems all the day is actually really draining. So that would be, I guess, an example of where they're working in an environment that's not the right fit, and again, not good for their personality.
And the adverse would be just a situation like yours where you want to be out talking, communicating and being around people, but you're doing an analytical sort of behind the scenes job, which is great for that type of personality.
Yeah. And look, again, you know, there's people that do, you know, choose a certain career thinking that they're going to be dealing with people, but in fact, they're not. And, you know, again, a perfect example of that is someone who goes into law because they want to be a humanitarian lawyer, and they think that they're going to be helping people, get to the end of their law degree, and they end up in a commercial law firm in the city, sitting at a desk all day, reading legislation and writing and not really seeing anyone at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So that's, I actually haven't thought about that before. So like, I think I stumbled into a job, maybe the job I was going to get wasn't going to be the one I was destined to have, but I originally went into a recruitment style integrated job seeking thing that they sent me out to just random jobs all the time. And I stumbled across a job in working in ABB transformers, building these high voltage transformers. And so the electricians would come out and they would sit in an air conditioned room for the whole time. And then I'd walk out and they'd be like, test, 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 test. And then they'd go back in their room. And then, well, we're out and sweating, standing up all day long. And they were the ones with the nice cars out the front. So I was like, I think I'm going to be an electrician.
So, and that's what drove you to go and do your apprenticeship.
Yeah. And but on that energy thing as well, like my work's always created energy for me, especially when it became my own business and I started creating businesses, and I'm a people person as well. So being out and about on site is so fun because you can just be loud and obnoxious and like crazy, and I really enjoy that. And that was well suited to my personality. So, you know, now I'm loud, obnoxious and out on social media for my business. But
Well, I mean, I talk to people all the time who, like, particularly a lot of guys that I see who say that, you know, in hindsight, they should have gone and done a trade. And their personality, they're often people that are very practical and very good with detail and process. They like being physical and hands-on, but they've been, you know, they've done what is they think is expected of them and gone to uni, got 2 or 3 years in, completely not interested in what they're doing. And then they kind of feel like, oh, I've left it a bit late. But, you know, I could, the number of people who've said to me, oh, you know, I just wish I'd gone and done what I wanted to do and did an apprenticeship instead of feeling this pressure that, you know, everyone else was going to uni. So I had to do that as well.
Yeah, I did that as well. So I deferred from uni for a year, which I got accepted into uni, said, and I think someone suggested just take a year and just do some work and see what you like. And then, you know, so I did that. And plus, I think I had to because my mum and dad moved away when I finished high school because they I came 10 years after my youngest sister and 18 after my eldest. So, wow. You know, by the time I finished high school, they're like, see ya. We're going to Margaret River. So when I, you know, deferred, I think that's, you know, maybe a blessing in disguise. But what would you say to someone who, you know, feels like they've left it too late?
Well, look, you know, I think the first thing you need to do is get out and talk to people. I think one of the biggest obstacles to making a career change is assumptions that we make. And often they are, you know, I'm too old, I'm too, you know, I'm not going to earn enough money, I won't have the flexibility. But often until you actually get out and talk to people, you don't really know whether that assumption is actually true. So the first thing I would say is, you know, you need to get out and talk to people and get their advice, particularly people who are in that industry who can actually tell you whether it is realistic, whether you will have to take a pay cut. And, you know, many times it's not actually what you believe is the case. Isn't. So I think it's always worth exploring and go through that self-assessment. Like, I think, you know, what we take people through is, you know, getting back to what is your personality? What are the things that you just do naturally? You know, what are the sort of conversations you like having when you go to a bookshop? What books do you pick up? You know, there's a lot of, I guess you can get a lot of insights just thinking about the things that you enjoy doing in your personal life and even what your friends and family come to you for.
Mm.
So that first piece is, you know, it's often quite difficult, but it's worth taking the time to do that self-assessment. And then as a result of that, you start to sort of perhaps identify some careers that you are interested in that might be a better fit. And then the next step is the research. So, you know, actually getting out there, bit of online research, but the more, you know, conversations you can have with people, that's how you'll get the really, you know, the really good information that will help you make an informed decision.
Yeah. So have you got some examples, maybe, you know, a couple of examples of people who have come in really unsure, maybe an example of a first time going into a job, an example of someone who's been in a job but doesn't like it, and someone that's doesn't even know that they don't like their job. That if you've got examples of those, that would be, I think that would cover pretty much everyone who doesn't like their job.
Yeah, so I guess the first case, someone who has just started in a job is, you know, it might be someone who is a graduate and they just feel like it hasn't quite clicked and there's just something that's not quite right. And often, you know, again, people go and study and then when they actually get into the work, it's nothing like what they were expecting. So I'm just trying to think of an example, but you know, I talk to people like this all the time. Like, for instance, you know, a bit similar to me, like I've worked with accountants who you know, just feel like they're just not passionate about the work, and they feel they want to get out and talk to more people. They want to be doing more perhaps strategic type work, not sitting there, you know, balancing debits and credits. So, you know, someone like that often, sometimes it just takes a while to, you need to settle into a job. Like often someone when first start a job, it can take 6 months just to feel like you understand what you're doing. So I always say to people, give it a little bit of time. Don't rush into making that decision, particularly if it's early in your career, because often they're just not in the way of working. Like, they're not used to getting up every morning and going to work and being sitting at a desk all day. Like, so that's really hard. For someone who's perhaps, you know, quite like physical, they might need to go out and have a run at lunch and burn off some energy so they can actually sit there for the day. So sometimes it's just getting used to the change in environment and change in lifestyle. So I wouldn't rush into, you know, quitting your job after 6 months. But, you know, I think often people know pretty soon that perhaps they haven't made the right decision.
How do you go about, say, if I didn't need to worry about it because as an apprentice electrician, you're sort of in the job and experiencing it. But for someone that's deciding that I'm going to go to university or college and then I'm going to go 4 years, 5 years, 7 years sometimes at university, and then to get to the end and be like, oh, actually, I actually don't like this. So is there anything that you've learnt that people can maybe try or do to get a better understanding of whether or not that's the right thing for them before they go and study it?
Yeah, well, look, again, it's going out and actually talking to people about what the job involves. You know, I always say use your personal contacts, whether it's family, friends, or LinkedIn is my favorite tool for research. So you could go on there. Like, I guess an example of it that comes to mind is someone who's like a landscape architect, where they assume that they're going to be outside all day, like really like a landscaper. But in actual fact, a landscape architect who's working on really big jobs in the city firm, they will be at their desk for a large amount of the day, or, you know, maybe 80, 90% of the day. Yeah. So it's not like they're wandering around outside all day. So I think sometimes you could go onto LinkedIn and do a search for, you know, landscape architect in Melbourne, find, you know, hundreds of people who actually do that job and reach out to them and see if they'd be willing to have a 10-minute, 15-minute chat to answer some questions. You know, most people actually really like talking about themselves and about their job. So I think people don't realize how generous people are with their time, and they've also been where you are, like they've been in that spot and they want to help you make the right decision. And look, at the end of the day, if they don't get back to you, who cares? Like, you're no better off. I'm no worse off, I should say.
Yeah.
So just go for it. And, you know, it's a way of then building a network and building connections in that industry if you do decide to go ahead.
Yeah. I love what you say there. We talk a lot on this podcast about fear of failure, and like people don't take action and it paralyzes them because they're scared someone's going to say no, or that they feel like they've failed by someone telling them no. But I love how you present, just like, who cares? Like, if they say no, just carry on. No, ask 20 people, someone will say yes.
Yeah, fear of failure, like that is a huge obstacle again for career change, and that worry of, well, what if it doesn't work out? And often when you drill down to it, it's like, well, you can just go back to what you're doing. Like, the worst thing that could happen is that you do make a bad decision and it's not what you think it is and you can't find a job. But look, most people can still go back and do what they were doing before. So I often sort of get my clients to start building up that, I call it like that action muscle. So starting to do little things that they've never done before, just to realize that you can do something new and ask someone for something. And if they say no, it actually doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's that also that saying, you don't know how much you love something until it's gone. So you might leave, start your new job of like, this is what I want, and then go, I actually love my old job, and go back.
Yeah, that's right. And often often people are just scared of change, and because they just have done the same thing for such a long time, they're just, it's like that fear of actually doing something different. So I've got a client who she had worked at Coles for about 15 years, and she was in a office sort of office management type of job in a store, but she had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Monday morning to go in and count all the for the what are those self-serve registers, have to have all the cash ready. And she had two young children and she was getting up, I think, 4 o'clock on a Monday, and like she had to be at work at 5 or 6 on other days. And she was just exhausted and couldn't even think about making a career change because she was ready for bed about 7 o'clock at night as soon as the kids had gone to bed.
Yeah.
And so I encouraged her to just start trying some new things. And I gave her a challenge. I said, I want you to, this week, I want you to actually go and book in to a class or do something, one new thing that you've never done before. And so she went down to her, I think it was like the middle of the day, went down to a local like indoor climbing center and did the, you know, the thing where you jump off the top of the pylon onto, I can't remember what it's called, like a...
At the rock climbing, like this, the bouldering places.
Yeah, but they have this thing. It's like this drop where you climb up the ladder and then you jump out and try
long
and...
drop. Bungee jumping.
Yes. Yeah, sort of like that. Anyhow, she went and did that, whatever she did, and she was just so empowered afterwards. And she just, after that, she decided she was going to go indoor rock climbing for an hour on her own when the kids were at school every week. But it was just sort of building up that action muscle of doing new things and realizing that it's actually quite energizing and quite fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great story too. And so, and it empowers, you know, those little things of you doing, like you said, it really does empower you to make and understand what you do and don't like. If you're so busy with your work and drained because you don't like it and you're not energized by it, then when it comes to doing other things, you just don't, like you were saying.
So, that's right. So it's, you know, tuning into the things that you enjoy. Look, unfortunately, you know, sometimes people have these hobbies which they know like they're never really going to make a living out of. But it's important that they find some time in their week to do some things that they find fun. It might be for someone who's quite creative, who's sort of in a job that's not creative. It's really important that they're doing something, you know, once a week that's using that creative part of their brain, which will kind of energize them, build their confidence, make them feel happy.
Yeah, no, it's so important. So have you got any examples of people who have gone and changed careers and come back and realized that it wasn't for them? It's just to make it, I guess what I'm trying to get the listener to understand is like, if you do make a mistake, it's okay to come back, like we were talking about earlier. Or you've done such a good job. Actually, you've done such a good job at selecting the perfect job that they don't ever come back.
Yeah, I actually can't think of anything. I mean, there's definitely people that go and explore things and then decide they're going to stay where they are. And often they realize that, you know, they're actually, things aren't that bad, but perhaps they're just not in the right environment. So they might just need a job change. Yeah. They don't necessarily need to go out and start all over again. Like when we drill down, they just need to, sometimes it's just a bit of a pivot. Like it might be even looking for opportunities to change their job internally so they can do more of the things that use their strengths and less of the things that they don't. So it might be as simple as having a chat with their manager about how they can slightly change their role just to get a little bit more of the stuff that they enjoy.
Yeah.
I can't actually think, I'm sure I will think of something later, but I can't actually think of anyone who's changed and gone back, because I think, you know, usually people that come to us, they're either looking to do something that's more meaningful. And usually they're people that are helpers who are really driven to do work that gives back and contributes to society. So that's sort of one group that come to see a career coach. Another group would be the creatives who aren't getting any creative, you know, not able to do anything creative at work. So they're sort of two key areas that I find, you know, I always look at people's profiles and they come and think, oh yeah, another person who wants to help.
Yeah.
And often that's values based. Like I think, you know, often when we start a job in our 20s, it's more about status or earning lots of money, working in a nice office, drinks in the city on a Friday night. So we're sort of not thinking about things that are deeper than that. And so I find that often people, they might have worked in a job for 20 years or in industry, say in sales or marketing, and then they have children and they get a little bit older and they think, well, you know, I'm slogging my guts out for 70 hours a week for fish fingers. Like, really, at the end of the day, do I really care? And yeah. Who else, you know, if I died today, would anyone actually care? Would it make a difference? So they get to that point where they want to do something that's giving back and is more personally meaningful.
Yeah. No, that would be a massive driver, especially as you get older and have kids and realize life's more about, you know, more than just working and going out on the weekends. So I'd love to hear your opinion on how a person looking for a job can find that perfect job. So how do you go about, what are some of the things that maybe people wouldn't know about instead of going to your traditional seek, or maybe it's the way they set up their resume or the way they present themselves. What are some tips that you could give to people looking for jobs around that side of things?
Yeah, so I guess my biggest tip is that most people default to like a traditional, what I call a passive job search strategy. And that means going onto job boards like Seek, which like Seek is fantastic. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but going onto a job board, it's just about time. Like you can't really expect that perfect job to come up at that perfect company just in those 2 or 3 weeks that you're looking for a job. So I guess to perhaps improve your chances of finding a job that is going to be meet all your other criteria, it's what I would say it's the best way to do that is to implement what I call an active job search strategy. And that's sort of like putting yourself in the driver's seat and saying, well, I would love to work for these 10 companies. And then it's sort of drilling down using tools like LinkedIn to actually research those companies, find people who work there, find people you know people who work there, try and connect with those people. You know, you might actually have a really nice resume and cover letter and or what I call an expression of interest letter and approach them directly. So find someone on LinkedIn who works in who you would report to or find their head of talent acquisition and actually approach them directly and say, look, I would love to work for your company for these reasons. I've attached my resume. I understand you may not be recruiting at the moment, but, you know, keep me in mind for a suitable role. So that sort of approach, it means that you're actually targeting companies where you feel your values are aligned and perhaps they're close to home, so they meet your criteria of having less commute time, etc. So that strategy you could use in addition to going onto job boards, but it's probably going to increase your chances of actually finding the job that meets your perfect criteria.
Yeah, I love the active seeking. Like effectively it's a sales campaign for your own life, isn't it? You're going through, and like I have a business academy and I teach people how to hire and get jobs and all that sort of stuff, and it all follows the same principles. It's to do it active outreach. Don't just wait for jobs to come to you or people to come to you. You know, you got to actively go out there. And another thing that I do as an employer and the what I teach is an evergreen hiring campaign. So it's like a nonstop campaign to hire someone all the time, because the chances that you'll get, just what you said, the chances that you'll get the right person at the right time is pure fluke. Like it's a timing thing. So,
And look, I used to work in, after I sort of worked in recruitment, I worked with companies to help them with their recruitment strategy and implementing these, you know, recruitment technology systems that help them, give them the capability to actually build a talent pool. And, you know, I think organizations, they're crazy if they're not doing that. If they can actually have a link on their website that says, you know, there may not be any jobs in your area, but we want to hear from you and submit an expression of interest. And then the recruiters can go straight to that talent pool and find people who actually really want to work for them before they go out and advertise and pay recruiters to find someone.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the key going forward, particularly after COVID, like it is going to be a much more competitive job market. So you have to network. And I know that's not hard. It's not easy for people, particularly if you're a bit more on the introverted side, but you have to find a way to do it that suits your personality. And I guess that's why I love LinkedIn, because I think for people who aren't, you know, and really there's no events to go to at the moment, so it's a bit hard to network at events, but you can find people on LinkedIn and, you know, I could connect with you and say, look, I listened to your podcast. I really enjoyed your episode on blah, blah, blah. Would love to keep in contact. So it's a great way of starting to build some connections in industries or companies that interest you. And again, you know, it's a bit of a softer approach.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the thing I love to see from as an employer is people reaching out when I don't even have an ad up for an employee. Like someone that's like, I've taken the time to look at your business and I really want to be a part of your business because of X, Y, and Z. Some, like if I've just even been thinking about it a little bit, I'll try and find a way to get that person on because that's the person I want in my business. So just a little bit of inspiration that for people that are looking for jobs now. If you're from an employer, myself, if you're outreaching to a business, you're a superstar. Like you're going to come across with, really positive feedback.
Yeah. And you know what? It should be flattering for the business, particularly, you know, a small business owner. They're like, oh, wow, they really want to work for my business. And I think if you do your research and show that you've really like their product, or you've got to know their products or their services and explain why that resonates with you and why you would like to sell that product or, you know, whatever the role involves. But like, there's no reason why you shouldn't try. Like, obviously, companies can't just always create a role for someone, but you just never know. It could be just good timing. I mean, that's how I actually got my first job as a career coach. I researched quite a few websites and contacted a few people. And I emailed a lady in Sydney and said, you know, I really love what you do. I think it would be a really good fit for my background. I've attached my resume. You know, if you're ever looking for someone in Melbourne, I'd be really keen to talk to you. And it was my lucky chance, because a month later, one of the consultants in Melbourne resigned and I then picked up that contract work and ended up working as a subcontractor for 6 years.
Cool.
But that was, you know, that was sort of what gave me my in and built my confidence in this space. And the thing is, in my industry, like many others, you hardly ever see a career coach role advertised on Seek. So I could have sat there for years waiting for a job to be advertised, because usually it's through people connecting or referring people that they know.
Yeah. Or someone reaching out at the right time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making a good impression.
Yeah. And yeah, I might have been still waiting. Maybe I would have even gone back to doing tax returns.
Yeah, you'd still be doing it.
Definitely not.
Cool. So a couple of things. I have a strategy where as an employer to get the right person for my business, and I get them to submit a video of themselves and why they want to be a part of the business. Have you ever heard of someone doing anything like that? And is that part of, like, I think it makes an exceptional impression. Like if I get a video from someone and they're like, hey, I want to work for your business, like I'm like, yes, all right, how can I find a job for this person? But
video interviews are really common, and particularly at the moment, like all the graduate programs, a lot of the first step is a video interview. And a lot of companies are doing that. I guess I feel it, like, for someone who, I don't really like video myself, and I think particularly people who are a little bit older, perhaps, you know, the younger generation, they've grown up, particularly the really young kids now, they spend their whole time videoing themselves and dancing and singing and talking into a phone. But I think for older people, it's actually really confronting. And I think, you know, particularly someone who's a bit more introverted, they might find it really difficult to sell themselves when there's no one at the other end.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. And it is hard. We've, you know, definitely found in our business, we do need more extroverted sort of people, because they're out there, they're talking to customers, they're engaging, and I want them to be that sort of personality. So that's a good way for me to get the type of person that I need, and everyone else sort of just don't even apply, you know?
Yeah. Look, I think if you're advertising for someone in sales or someone in where they've got to be out there and they've got to be confident and they've got to be able to talk to people, then that's a perfect way to find the right fit. I think for other jobs, then, you know, it seems sort of a little bit unfair, I find, where someone who's applying to be a data analyst who is a high introvert, very shy, and they're made to do a video interview. I think that's a bit mean.
Yeah, fair enough. I would agree, actually. If I was hiring those sort of people, I wouldn't make them do it. Honestly,
might be painful to watch.
Push you to your limits here. Yeah. Cool. The other thing was, I'd love to hear some stories around what not to do, you know, things that you've heard people are doing, which is like, oh no, you can't do that when you're applying for jobs.
Okay, where should I start? So I think coming back to the networking, I think you have to be mindful of people's time. I think it's great to reach out to people, but I always say, look, just ask them for a 10-minute phone call. You know, I had one client who said, I just don't understand. I've contacted like 50 people and no one has agreed to meet with me. And I said, well, you know, can you send me the email or, you know, what you've been sending in the message? And she'd been asking all these people to have lunch with her. And I thought, well, you know, like she's never met them. I mean, most people don't even have time to have lunch with their closest friends anymore. Like everyone's so busy. So I suggested that we tone it back and, you know, even asking for a 10-minute phone call, that's probably kind of pushing it enough until you've actually established a connection. And they might give you a half an hour of your time, but you still need to be mindful that people are busy. They don't have time to be meeting people for lunch, you know, particularly people that, look, some people might, but most people, I think they're probably less likely to answer that email.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be one thing when it comes to networking. Another one is like with online networking, I think you have to treat it the same way as you would walking into an event and meeting someone. So if you are connecting with people on LinkedIn, always write a note and explain why you're connecting rather than just sending a connection request without an explanation. So I think that would be sort of like walking into an event and shaking someone's hand before you say hello. So,
yeah.
You know, I think you've got to treat it still in a professional manner. Likewise, have a professional photo on LinkedIn. If you're going to be on LinkedIn, you want to attract the sort of people that you want to work with. So no wedding photos, no photos with kids. No photos with sunnies on. Yeah, I think you've got to, if you're going to be on there for the purpose of getting a job or for job search, you've got to represent yourself in the way that look like the people that you want to work with.
Yep, for sure. So we could also maybe pull in some salesy techniques here as well, which is for me, I feel like if someone was tagging, commenting under posts, liking posts for a little while before they did that direct message and ask, then that could increase the chances that they would actually be receptive to your random message, you know?
Yeah, I think like that's one of our strategies that we talk about, and you can follow people on LinkedIn, you can follow companies, but you can also follow people. So as you say, liking their comments, sharing them maybe, you know, once every couple of weeks, writing some comments, then they start to see your name. And then if a position does come up and you apply, they're like, oh, I've seen her on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely a good strategy. And, you know, the other thing is, if you haven't looked for a job for a while, you do want to get someone to, whether it's a recruiter or a resume writer, to have a look at your resume. There's a lot, resumes have changed so much in the last probably even 5 to 10 years. They're now more like a sales document, like a marketing document, where some people still sort of feel like it's more like an obituary where they list every single thing they've done.
And what they've done. Oh my God, reading those is not fun.
No, and so some people, you know, I've seen people have got, you know, they're 40 and they've got where they went to primary school and the awards that they got. that they got in primary school. And like no one, you know, seriously, yeah. no one cares.
Yeah.
So you don't have to list every single job you've done, every casual job you've done. Like even the last 10 years is probably enough. You might have a few, you might have jobs earlier than that listed in a table, but you don't need to have all the detail if it's not relevant. No photo on your resume. You don't need a birth date. You don't need your religion. You don't need your marital status. Like they're all things that we put on resumes 20 years ago. So if you've still got a resume that looks like that, it's going to turn recruiters off pretty quickly that they know that you, you know, it's a bit old school.
Yeah. And no, dear sir, madam.
Yeah. No, well, like that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because often you don't know who to address it to.
Yeah.
I still think that one, that is quite difficult. If you're able to get the name of the person, it's better to put it in, but you also want to make sure it's spelt right. I used to, as a recruiter, I used to often get emails sent to Dear Leech instead of Leah. And
oh, right.
That probably, you know, those ones probably went into the no pile pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, get the spelling of names correct as well. But would that be a phone call to the main office and say, like, who's the person to address this to, you know?
It's just yeah, a little bit of research. Yeah, a little bit of research goes a long way. Preparing for interviews is it's really important these days to prepare really well for interviews. Most interviews are behavioural interviews and they're really hard interviews if you don't prepare. For anyone who doesn't know, a behavioural interview, they will ask questions like, tell us about a time when you used your problem-solving skills, or give us an example of when you resolved a conflict. So they're really specific. So I think, you know, when I first started my career, you just sort of turned up in a half-decent suit, and if you were an extrovert, you could kind of just wing it. You probably didn't really need to prepare. But these days, you know, even the most extroverted people who are good, you know, got the gift of the gab, they still will not impress in an interview unless they've done really good prep.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. So I'd love to talk a little bit about employers. So with the employers, I was just wondering some tips around how they could find and connect almost with people who are, you know, making a big effort to get the right job. How can an employer set themselves up to get a good candidate?
Yeah, good question. I mean, a lot of companies now are, unfortunately, the computer does the first screening, which makes it much more an efficient process. So they are putting keywords into a computer system and basically a robot screens out probably 75% of the resumes before they even are seen by a human.
Yeah.
I think a lot of companies are realizing that there's a lot of unconscious bias in recruitment. Some companies are actually starting to sometimes even get away from having a resume at all and getting people to answer questions and do tests online. Some are removing the name of schools and universities from resumes before they're actually reviewed, so that there's that, you know, that unconscious bias doesn't exist. So, look, I think that's a really good strategy for some companies who have perhaps, you know, a sort of old school network tends to choose people just based on where they went to school or where they grew up rather than whether they are the right candidate.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at the social media as well. I mean, a lot of recruiters will look at people's social media accounts and do research before they choose someone. And I think particularly young people, you have to be really careful with your social media. I had a young client come to see me. And I always look at people's social media before they come and see me as well. But I had a young client who, on her Facebook, she had probably 50 photos from in nightclubs. And I think when I spoke to her, like most of them were taken on her 21st. So it was kind of almost like a once-off type of occasion.
Probably the worst looking photos on the 21st as well.
Yeah, but for like a recruiter, you would immediately make the assumption that she was a bit of a party girl and perhaps is going to be calling in sick most Mondays and, you know, not really on the ball. So I think you've got to be really careful about what sort of perception your social media is projecting, even if it's actually not true.
Yeah, for sure.
So look, companies need to do their research and they need to make sure that their hiring managers are asking the right questions at interview. Often hiring managers, again, don't ask the right questions and don't get those good examples from people about how they've performed in the past. So I think if companies want to make the right decisions, they've also got to invest in training their hiring managers to actually know how to interview candidates to get the information they need to make the right decisions.
Yeah, I think that's like analyzing what is the role that they're going to have and what are the things, what's the question that you could ask, like the behavioral style question, where they couldn't just say, yeah, I can do that. You know what I mean? Amount of times I got fooled by someone going, yeah, I'll do that and that and that. And you send them out and they're like, what are you doing? You don't know how to
They've
do that.
They've got no idea. Yeah, and that's the idea of behavioural interviewing, is that it's evidence-based. So rather than saying, how would you go if you had a conflict with a colleague, it's instead give us an example of where you've had a conflict and how you dealt with it. Yeah. And the idea is that it's evidence-based, so the way you behave in the past is the most likely a way you can predict how someone would behave in the future.
Yeah.
So as a result of that, there should be more validity to the responses and more likely that you're choosing someone who actually meets the competencies to do the job.
Do you do any questions like, what would you do if you won $1 million or things like that to try and work out value systems and things like this?
I don't. I mean, I'm not interviewing anymore. I think it's quite rare that someone would ask. Sometimes they ask stress questions. I know I've had clients ask questions like, who's your favourite Disney princess and why?
Oh, why?
Yeah. And that's, it's, I mean, the idea is to see you, what happens when you're put on the spot and under pressure and to see, Look, most questions these days are pretty standard. They're all pretty boring, really. It's usually around strengths, weakness, your motivation, why you want the job, and then some behavioural questions to back up, you know, the competencies required.
Yep. Cool. Awesome. So that were really good tips for employers. Thank you very much. So I'm still very intrigued and I've been waiting for this moment to ask about strength coaching. So can you give me a rundown of strength coaching and how can someone do a little bit of strength analysis on themselves or others if they're working with people needing to understand their strengths?
Yeah, for sure. So look, there's quite a number of different strengths assessment tools. I use one called Strengths Profile. There's one called Gallup, which you can do online, which there's a free version. So the idea, I guess, of having a really good in-depth knowledge of your strengths is that it will help you find opportunities in your current role to perhaps find, create work opportunities that you where you get to use your strengths. And usually if people are using their strengths, they are doing work that comes naturally, they are more energized by the work and they're more engaged.
And more strong in their role.
Yeah, that's right. And so the idea of strengths coaching is, I guess, helping people understand what they do best and so that they will find jobs and careers where they're more engaged. But it's also, I guess, the tool that I use, it's actually a development tool. So we look at what your realized strengths are. So they're strengths that you, things that you're really good at, things that energize you and things you use a lot. We look at learned behaviours, so they are skills or strengths that you use a lot. They're things that you're good at, you use a lot, but they de-energise you.
Yeah.
Okay, so like I was sort of saying before, they're things you've learnt to do, like when I was reading tax legislation, but it drained me. So it's something that I don't want to use very often. Then we look at weaknesses and we sort of say, well, they're just weaknesses. Let's just face it. You're not good at them, you don't want to use them, and they drain you. So unless they're critical to your role, just forget about them. And if they are critical to your role, maybe you can find a strength and look at it through a different lens. So to give you an example of that, for someone who hates public speaking, their strength that would probably be in their weakness would be spotlight. Okay, so it means they are very de-energized and not very good at speaking in public. So we might then look at some of their realized or unrealized strengths and say, well, in your strengths up here, you've got explainer, which means you're really good at explaining things. So how about next time you get up and have to speak in front of a group of people, look at it through that lens and think, I'm just explaining things. It doesn't matter that everyone's looking at me because I'm really good at this. So it's quite powerful because you're looking at it through a different lens, and it's a way of, I guess, replacing a weakness with something that you're good at.
So reframing it. Yeah.
Yeah, reframing, exactly. And then the fourth quadrant, which I love, is what we call the unrealized strengths. So they're things that you're really good at. You are energized when you're using them, but for some reason, you're not using them very often. And that's really the power of this tool that I use, because it's thinking, well, where in your job could you use that, dial that up and use some of those unrealized strengths more? And that's sort of why it's a powerful tool, because it's sort of, you know, you can identify then where, oh, well, perhaps I, you know, relationship deepener is my unrealized strengths. Maybe I'm not using that. Maybe I could use that more. And that might actually improve the relationship I have with my manager.
Yeah, because, so good.
You know, so it's quite a fun tool to use. But as I said, look, there are free tools, the strengths tools that you can go online and do yourself. Another great thing about strengths assessments is it gives you the vocab to actually explain what you're good at, and in a slightly different way. So I think, you know, most people say, I've got good communication skills, I've got good organizational skills, I've got good problem solving skills, but they're just so cookie cutter. Like,
yeah, blended.
You know, in. I always say, well, you could work at McDonald's behind the checkout with those strengths, but yet you're applying for a senior management role. So it gives you some better language to actually describe your strengths in a better way.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. So with these unrealized strengths, is there some examples, I guess, that people would maybe feel like they're being drained by some weaknesses, but then when they realize their unrealized strengths, you can reframe it in a way so that now it's that weakness becomes this unrealized strength. Is that?
Yeah. So that it's sort of like, no, it's tricky. So you might go, okay, well, this is a weakness, but what unrealized strengths have you got that you could use instead?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, for example, again, talking about spotlight, it's where you've got to get up and also say, so maybe their weakness is action. So they're a little bit, you know, they don't really like taking action. It's something that doesn't come naturally. But again, one of their unrealized strengths might be mission or legacy, which means that, you know, they're really stronger, want to leave something behind that other generations will use, or they've got a mission. And so it's like, well, how about instead of next time you're unmotivated, think about what you want to achieve at the end of this, and maybe that will motivate you to take action.
I suppose that's just like going to the gym. Like, you want to have a stronger body, you want to have a better looking body, you want to feel healthier and have the energy from going to the gym. But no one really likes getting hurt when you go to the gym. You know what I mean? But that's sort of a weakness, because you're getting weak by lifting them. But then your muscles repair and you get stronger and you feel better. So that's like, you know, I think that's when you attach yourself to the purpose, which is your unrealized strength or the mission or the vision, that weakness becomes negligible in a way.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
And that's right. And look, it depends what their strengths are. So, you know, it's quite common that there's different strengths families. So someone might have more strengths, like someone like me, my strengths are more around relationships and people. My weaknesses are more around probably the analytical, critical thinking, problem solving type strengths. So luckily the work I do at the moment, it's more around coaching, connecting, building relationships. So where when I was working in tax, it most of the strengths I needed were actually all things that are in my weakness quadrant.
Yeah, sure. Cool. Mm. No, good rundown on the strengths profiling. That's really good and good tips there. Thanks for sharing.
No, good.
Cool. Is there anything else that you'd like to add in terms of like something that you've said in the past that you feel like's helped people looking for careers that we haven't mentioned yet before we wrap it up?
Look, I guess coming back to look, I've probably sort of touched on this before, but I think if things aren't working, if you are just applying for job after job after job and it's not working, then you need to find a different way of doing it. And so the first thing might be actually getting someone to look at your resume and your cover letter and just see if there's anything obvious that you're not doing well. It might be terrible template. It might be just not succinct enough. So that can be some really low-hanging fruit that with a you know, some help with that, that might just help you get in front of people. So I think if it's not working, you know, you've got to change it up. So looking at making sure your documents are good, making sure that you're using your networks where you can, and making sure you're preparing well for interviews. I actually did a podcast recently with an internal recruiter, and we were talking about the people that are remembered for the wrong reasons. And her story, and you'll like this, Greg, was she was interviewing someone and I think it was a Zoom, they were interstate, so it was a Zoom interview, and in the middle of the interview, they actually pulled out a kebab and started eating the kebab in the interview. Which is like of all the things to eat during an interview, like a kebab, yeah. So that was pretty funny. So no kebabs, yeah. You must have been really hungry, the poor guy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I think my wife just had she was getting a job as a neonatal nurse, and they did it via Zoom recently, and they had four or five different people sitting there on the call. And they were, and she's like, they would ask a question, and then it would just go silent. And then she'd be like, "Hello?" It's like, "Yep, we're just filling out the form."
So, oh, that's terrible.
And she's like, "This is so awkward."
So look, I guess that's my advice at the moment with COVID is a lot of interviews are video. So if you're not used to video, you need to practice. Make sure your tech's set up, you know, log on 15 minutes earlier or the day before, make sure you know how to use Zoom, make sure your lighting's okay. Like the number of people I've spoken to where I'm looking up their nostrils for 90 minutes because of the way they've got the camera tilted. Yeah. Or you can just see the top of their head. Like, you know, you've got to make sure that you're sitting in good light, that you are prepared and that you know how to use the tech and just practice. You can record yourself on Zoom and practice talking into the screen and play it back to see how you come across and whether your setup's okay.
That's a really good tip. And something that you got to remember is if you don't have lighting, then face a window, you know, as long as there's not direct sun coming straight into your face. But yeah, if it's shady and it's a sunny day, you should get some really good light coming straight through the window to light your face up.
Yeah, and look, you can be creative. You can have your laptop on an ironing board or something like that, and you don't have to, if you don't have a desk, I think you've got to move around the house and work out what works best for you. But, yeah, look, video interviews, it's definitely becoming more common, and it's also, I guess, practicing, you know, delivering your answer fairly succinctly because you don't have that body language and you don't, it's hard to get that feedback. So I think you have to be a bit punchier when you're doing video interviews. Otherwise, they'll all fall asleep.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Leah. I really appreciate you coming on and so many good tips there. And I hope a lot of people get a lot out of it. And where can people reach you if they need a bit of support to understand how to get a better job for themselves?
Yeah. So look, I've got my website is www.relaunchme.com.au. I've also got my own podcast called Relaunch Your Career, where I tend to mostly interview people who have made a career change or people who are working in different careers about, you know, their advice on how people can find out more and the sort of jobs and the typical day in that area. So if you're thinking of a career change, that could be you know, something, you might find some episodes that are of interest.
And great inspiration to make that move if it's something that you need to do for yourself.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. So I hope it does that.
Cool. Congratulations on that show. That's really good.
Thanks, Greg. And look, it's been great to talk to you, and I hope some of your listeners who might be going through a bit of a tricky time at the moment looking for a job, hopefully there's a few little tips in there that might help.
Definitely, I think there would be. Thanks so much, Leah. Have a good day.
Cheers. Thanks, Greg.